So, here with Leonard Kelly, season 11, episode 4. We're actually the 136th guest, so that's pretty awesome. But it sounds way more impressive than it is. I've been doing it 5 years, but I interview like 30 people like each time. So it's just been, you know, we were talking, it's just been tough to get you on, and I have so many people that I still have to, you know, figure out. I used to be so shy about asking, but I'll get right into I had stuff.
Yeah, but, you know, whenever you ask people, everyone wants to do it, you know?
Yeah.
They're all a little grubby. Yeah. Little attention seekers.
Yeah, for sure. And it's good, because it gives people a lot of engagement, you know, that's a good thing for it, so. But you're 23, right?
I'm 23, yes.
Yeah, so did you start doing comedy when you were 22 or still 21?
Well, I'm about to turn 24. My birthday is actually the same day as the moon landing.
Ah.
So they say.
Right.
You know? But, so yeah, I started like a little over 2 years ago. And, I don't know, who knows how much actual, because the, like, measuring the time of it is kind of weird, because depends how much you go up, right?
So, oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I just started around the same time as you doing stand-up, so it was like, you know, it's an interesting thing, because I grew up, like, the oldest in, like, my peer group, and then, like, I was the youngest for many years. So do you feel like age-wise, like, demographic, you kind of fit in, or was it tough being younger?
Oh, I mean, it's not necessarily just the younger thing. It's when you start, you don't know what it is, right?
So, oh, yeah, for sure.
You go to these places, like, I don't know, Scotty's Comedy Cove, and you're just, like, sitting in this absolute bleak, like, shithole.
Yeah.
You're watching all these dudes that are, like, in their 50s do comedy, and, you know, they don't watch you, but you're like, oh, man, I wish these guys would watch me. So it's, like, a weird thing, and then you get a little more exposed to it, and you're like, oh, those guys kind of suck.
Yeah.
I kind of suck.
This kind of a hard thing about comedy is, especially from the outside looking in, a lot of people who don't really watch comedy a whole lot or just watch it a little bit, they kind of have this misconception that it's very glamorous. When you're starting out, it's not glamorous at all. So there's sort of that getting used to. And also,
It's also good to go through that stuff, I think.
Yeah, because you have such a high barometer of what you want to do right. Like, you want to be so naturally good at it. But it takes time to really, like, I personally, like, didn't technically know how to write a joke until I was, like, 2 years in. Because it was just, like, the formula was hard for me to get down. It was, like, I had all these weird premises, but once you get into that formula of, like, okay, now I know how to do a punchline. Now I know how to do everything. Like, it's...
Yeah, and then just being able to try different shit out. Like,
oh, yeah, for sure. I've noticed, I was...
Working on jokes that you don't even do usually.
Right, I was watching some of your stuff, and I realized, like, you started out pretty observational, but your stuff is more darker. Would you resonate with that, that you've kind of gotten more into darker stuff with your humor? And?
I think sometimes, I don't like to do, like, shock jokes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's nothing like that.
What?
It's nothing like that. I wasn't like.
That's what I mean. I like to kind of do a little bit less than that, where it's like not too like abrasive when you do a punchline, but it's still gotta be like a. It's still gotta be somewhat catch someone off guard, you know.
Right.
A joke to work sometimes.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, for some people in the audience, sometimes those punchlines end up being about eating babies or.
Right.
Having sex with inanimate objects, and it's just the way it goes, you know?
Right.
I can write three jokes about my grandma, too. They just don't do as well.
Right. Because it's all about, you know, what your greater connection is to the audience, and really your sense of humor. Like, that's the one thing I had to learn is, like, you can't really focus on trying to generally make people laugh. You have to find your sense of humor, and then... people will flock to it. That's what I figured out. Is like,
and also a huge thing too. I think with when you're doing material that's a little bit, I don't know, like when you walk the line a little bit, and obviously, again, who the fuck knows what I know, really?
Right.
But you gotta kind of make them a little comfortable with you first, you know?
So oh, for sure.
Do hard stuff first, you kind of ease them in, and then you walk them down the line of being like, you know what I mean? Whatever you're trying to pull off.
It's all about just, I think, comfortability is the biggest thing, and just people want to know, people just want to know that you're comfortable. You know, if you look comfortable doing it, it's like half the game, really. It's like, and there's a lot of fake it till you make it type of stuff, because you'll be nervous when you go on stage. Even if you're not like a shy person, you'll be nervous because you want to do well. You want to, there's a pressure there to be like, okay, I got to be good. Because even though you know you're not at that place yet, the audience doesn't know. So if you show you're comfortable.
It's also it's all perceived pressure. Like right. when I would do like shows when I first started, I was absolute dog shit, but the pressure was so much more than when I do shows now, because I kind of feel like I can pull it off, you know?
Where right.
Before, you're like, oh, I don't know if this still works. So, but the comfortability thing, I think, is like double, because if you're doing a joke, like a double-edged sword, like if you're doing a joke that is really out there, like if you do anything about like race, this is what I find. If you do anything about like race or anything like political,
yeah.
Sometimes it's better to almost be uncomfortable, because it kind of softens your stance on it in a way.
Oh, for sure.
Like if you can come on at something and be like, listen, I have no idea. Like, I don't know if I'm right about this.
Right.
It kind of gives you a little leeway to like play with the audience a little bit and get them to kind of like look at your side a little bit more unless you're just like, oh man, yeah, I know everything, you know what I mean, and like Mr. Suave up there talking about whatever.
Right. It's very much just trying to get that engagement with the audience and really get them into it. I'm not really great at that. I usually am too focused on myself to really, you know, focus too much on the crowd, which I should do more. But It is interesting. I totally resonate with doing weirder stuff. I mean, that's always been my sort of take with it, is I don't like to do observational stuff, and like that's like normal observation stuff, and because I just can't. I'll just find weird things to talk about, and I just say I have to explain it to normal functioning people.
Yeah, I mean, anything could be made funny. I really do think.
Yeah.
To a degree, I mean. Yeah, some things people won't necessarily laugh at.
Right.
But I think there's a way to make everything funny.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So who were your people, that comedians that you sort of watched and really made you think, okay, I can do this, or I want to do this?
I was always really big into Norm MacDonald. Was probably my favorite.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, he's great. He was great.
And that's why when I started, especially too, I had to be careful, because I was like, everything I was writing was so like drawn out and like because you kind of like emulate the way
you emulate
jokes
people
based on what you like, you
know? Oh yeah, for sure.
I had to kind of pull it back, but I was big in him. I was huge Rodney Dangerfield guy.
Oh yeah, fantastic.
I thought he was really funny. When you watch so much, it's like there's so many girls.
Oh yeah,
okay, all those guys, great.
For sure,
I'm the two.
Yeah, we live in such a great period now where there's so many, like, great stand-ups that it's hard to really choose like who you really like, and you know, it changes so much. Yeah. And especially since you're seeing so many, like, you watch when you watch comedy more. Like, I was talking about this with my mom. When you watch it more, like, you get a taste of like what you like and what your standards are. So it changes, like, but it's cool, like.
Yeah. With the time too, I mean, like, if you watch old comedy, some of it still holds up. You know what I mean? Like, old Pryor specials are still funny.
And like the thing with Dangerfield that's like so like interesting with that type of humor is it used to not be so personal like we are now. Like, it used to be very much like actual kind of like jokes that you would be able to read in like a joke book. It'd be like that sort of thing. Now with comedy nowadays, it's so much more personal. that you really have to, like, know yourself well and know stuff about yourself to talk about and bring out. Well, I think vulnerability is a big thing, too, nowadays.
Yeah, and I think that's almost a little bit of a trap you can get.
Yeah.
Like, you got to remember that you're still writing jokes.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, we have some of these, like, kids come and like, try, you watch them at, like, open mics, go, oh, yeah, I have those, and then they almost, like, trauma dump on stage for,
yeah, exactly.
Minutes, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, they're fighting their way about it, but you got to always remember that, like, making it personal is great, but it's
yeah, supposed to be funny. There has to be that funniness to it, and that silliness, and also, like, I think you can notice, it probably seems so obvious, but, like, when you have a tougher subject or anything political, like, I always hate that I can't do, that I never do political comedy. Like, I can't do it well because I'm too obsessed with being right. And, like, yeah. To me, I'm like, anyone that does it well, I've noticed, it has to be, like, more silly than it is, like, really your opinion. It has to be just, you ramp up the silliness and the humor with it. And
it also sucks because, like, and this is why I don't really do political stuff, because you have people laughing sometimes, and you don't, it doesn't feel good,
right?
Because they're not laughing the way you want them to laugh, you know, like
right.
I used to do a joke about remember when they were doing the Stop Asian Hate thing?
Yeah,
and it was there was an Asian lady in Chinatown that got just clocked in the face out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Just knocked out.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody online was putting out this whole, like, oh, it's a crisis actor, you know?
Right.
Like, the fake stuff. And so I did a joke for a while that, like, that guy, that crisis actor, you know, he must have been just starting out, like, because he didn't have any lines. He was looking for jobs.
Right.
He gets his job. Right.
No, that's a clever thing to pull from it. So,
because it was just a dude who was really high and punched an Asian lady in the face. So I would say, like, oh, he went too method with it.
Right.
He really did an Asian people. But I would have people come up to me, like old fucks, and they'd be like, you know, that's real, and they would laugh at the crisis. And that's like, I don't even want to do that joke because you don't get that I'm making
right because you're making fun of it, you know. That's the toughest thing. Like, when I used to do bringer shows in New York, like, when I was starting out, I was, like, a year and a half in, 2 years, and it was great, but the thing that was always happened to me is I did a lot of jokes about being an atheist and religion jokes, and it would kill, like, great with, like, 20, 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds, but then their grandparents that were there would be upset with me, and I'd be like, I'm being heckled by your 90-year-old grandmother. This isn't fun.
Yeah. I run almost every joke I write through my grandma. I'm not even joking. Because I'll see her I want to say, like, a couple weeks or once a week, I'll go and see her. And she'll ask me what I've been working on, and I'll tell her. And she'll listen to all of them. She will not laugh at most of them.
Right.
She'll tell me that they're horrible. and disgusting, and she doesn't want me saying them, but she'll listen to all of them. She's a very supportive lady.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
Louise, shout out Louise, if she's watching this.
Oh, that's awesome, yeah. Yeah, that's great, you know, to have someone. It's like the same thing with my mom. She's very much like, since I don't drive, she's had to take me a lot before I started traveling with other comedians. And, like, the thing that's just very funny is, like, growing up, she's a little bit more, like, because she's just older now, like, she doesn't like some humor, but, like, for the most part, I never was really afraid of being dirty in front of her, because that was not, like, we just watched stuff when I was a kid. Like, I watched Blazing Saddles with my parents when I was very young, and, like, humor was fine. It was more like, couldn't watch, like, super violent stuff, like horror films and stuff like that. They were, like, normal parents in that way, but comedy-wise, they were pretty cool. My dad's pretty funny. Is your parents, or, like, your grandmother and stuff, are they funny, like, your family?
Yeah, I mean, so, I think my dad really was, like, the funny guy, because you, like, you know, when you're a kid, you, like, just want to make your parents laugh.
Yeah.
especially the ones you think is funny. So I would always try to make my dad laugh. I thought he was a real funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
And dry, he was very dry, too. I think that's why I got like that. Let me ask you something, because I was wondering this. I have this issue sometimes. I'll write jokes about like family, but not really like
mm-hmm.
like if I have a joke that works well about a grandma, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'll say like, oh, my grandma, and then like they'll hear the joke and they'll be like, Leonard, I don't do that,
right?
I'm like, no, grandma, it's not really you. I always just say it's the other grandma,
right? You know, it's that tough thing, because there is, with jokes, the thing that's interesting about them is there is an exaggeration to some of them. You know, that's where, like, the old school kind of comedy comes from, is, like, a lot of, like, you watch it, and it seems like a lot like lying, like, you know, but in a fun way.
Funny lying.
It's funny lying. That's basically what it is. It's like, you make it the most exact, like, some things can be true.
I mean, I do a joke about my grandma. I would say my grandma fell in the kitchen, right, and she laid there for a couple hours, and the whole joke is that, you know, she didn't get any help, but she has Alexa. She had Alexa in the kitchen, so she could have yelled out to Alexa the whole time,
right?
And she would have been saved, but Alexa listens to everything, so she heard my grandma yelling for help, and she's just like, "You all you got to do is say my name." You know what I mean?
Right.
Now that didn't happen to my grandma.
Right.
It happened to one of my aunts.
Oh.
You know, but what am I going to sit there and explain that happened to one of my aunts? I don't know. It's just
easier. Right. It's just people can relate to that more of, like, an older person, you know, falling over. And that's, like, something that people, like, to me, I'll have that. And the thing that always annoys me is, like, when I do a joke that's obviously an exaggeration, and, like, the audience gets that I'm being exaggerated, but sometimes comedians won't, which is fine to me. Like, I have this one joke about how I make fun of urgent care and how, like, I don't pay when I go there because I don't view them as actual doctors. And that's a lie, like, but it's just a funny concept to me. And, like, so many comedians, like, older guys will be like, no, you have to pay for urgent care. I'm like, I know, it's a joke. But, you know, it's hard. You gotta find your way to explain things and, you know, finding what you like. I just always say that, like, when I really had to figure it out, was just, you have to make what you find funny, you know, to really focus on and get deep into. And when you do it long enough, like we were talking about earlier, it just gets more comfortable. And I think you get more comfortable.
If it's funny, you'll get sick of it.
Yeah, and I think,
you know what I mean? Like,
well, the thing with that that's tough about doing it so much is you have to live life in between. Like, that's the tough thing. Because you want to do comedy all the time, you want to be consistent. But also you have to live life and go through shit to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why so many comedians, like, partying, and it's still a big thing, surprisingly, like, to me, that people still do, like, coke and stuff and, like, everything and, like, party super hard. But I'm like, I think the reason why comedians do that is not just for the hang, just because it's cool to hang out with comedians and your friends, but also it's because you want to put yourself in those crazy situations to talk about on stage and be like, you know.
I can see that to a degree, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you gotta give more credit to just how mentally unhealthy all of us are.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean,
like,
it totally is.
I'm not, obviously, not to air my own dirty laundry, but, like, you know, I've had crazy nights that were not the safest.
Right.
I don't really talk about them on stage for some reason. Because it's like, who wants to get known as that guy?
Right, you know what I mean? Sure.
When your whole thing is about just party and stuff. I don't know, it's some people's bag. Some people,
yeah, some people can do it. It's an interesting thing, though, to get, like, that's one thing I would say, if people ever get, like, you know, kind of sick with doing it, the big part is doing it in different places, too. So many people, like, I'm guilty of this, will get comfortable going to the same mics, and you just sort of become, like, a regular there, that the audience likes you, they like certain jokes that you do, and, like,
and what's the point?
And it's like, I'm not being challenged, like, now in the past 2 months, it's been very different for me in that it was never consistent for me. I'd have like a good set every once in a while, but it was never consistent. And now it's been consistent and my 10 minutes works very well. So when I go to a new mic now, like, it's great because the first week will be like, I can make a good impression. But then the next week, if there's no audience there, which there is some audience coming back now since COVID and everything, but if there is an audience there, it gives me less of an initiative, like, to do new jokes. Because I'll just be like, oh, new audience, they haven't seen me before, I can just do my 10-minute intro stuff.
I look at both. I mean, when I first started, like, going out to mics and stuff, I was, I don't know why, I just, even, like, even if I did jokes, and most of my jokes were horrible, but I wouldn't want to do them again at the same mic, even though it's just so stupid and so full of yourself, because no one's listening to you.
Right.
It's 12 o'clock at night, there's five dudes in the room, in the back, that aren't listening to you at all.
Right.
And then I would go, oh, they don't want to hear the same stuff. So I would write, like, new sets, like, every week to go to these fucking mics. And then you realize that you're not, like, no one gives a fuck. Like, you can just work on the same shit.
Yeah, that's the worst thing in comedy is the, like, apathy. Like, if you don't have, like, any reaction I learned is really, really good. Like, to me, I always was mixed with it. Sometimes I could say a joke and it would upset people, which rarely happened, but it did, and I would have the other two reactions to it. I would either be, like, totally, like, tell between my legs, just run out of there, just not apologize and be like, oh, I'm so sorry. And then sometimes I can be, like, impressed with myself or happy, and I'll be like, and I'll even say it on stage, I'll be like, wow, I said three words in random words in a sentence, and it triggered something in your mind to make you upset. Like, that's cool to me. Like, I'm always like, I love saying that on stage. I'm like, oh, I made you upset. That's kind of cool. Like, you don't know how it's going to happen. And to me, like, I'm not a big fan of, personally, of, like, gross-out humor. That never was what I'm into. But I do that a lot on stage now. And I found out, like,
what?
I do a lot of gross-out humor now.
Oh, gross.
Which, I don't personally like that type of humor, but, like, when I do it, it works with the audience. So I figured out, like, you can do comedy that isn't really your taste because the audience will just, you know, gravitate towards it. The biggest thing for me is I don't want to do, like, happy stuff. Like, that's the thing I'm always afraid of, that'll be viewed as, like, too lowbrow or too, like, easy. It's like,
I don't know.
That's the standard I hold myself to.
I'm very much in the camp that, like, you just gotta work on what you think is fine. Cause
yeah,
if I try to, like, I don't know, if I try to write jokes that I'm not really fully thinking is a good, like, funny premise, then I barely do it. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? I need to be interested in it.
Yeah, you need to. Well, of course, you need to have that interest, and also, like, that's where you can pull stuff in, and I think it's, like, really both great, but you should also not be down on yourself so much. When you started out, like, you seem, of course there's rough nights, and I've seen you do well and not do well, but you are, like, good, and you've gotten better, and that's the cool thing. Like, you've gotten a lot better.
No, but first of all, you also gotta understand, I would never, ever, ever come on a public platform and give myself any credit, especially in the beginning.
So that makes sense. It totally makes sense.
That really hype themselves up about it. There's no one is good enough.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, and it was rough. My thing was some guys they start off and they're very loud.
Right.
They talk really fast.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I was just very soft and slow. And
right.
I didn't really hit. I never would really hit any of my punchlines. You know what I mean? So even if I wrote a good joke, I had no idea how to deliver it.
Oh, yeah, for me too. It's like, and for you, like, you have a deeper voice. So that's better to go slower at, like, that pace.
Yeah.
It kind of works with that, like, having a deeper voice, I've noticed. Because I have a voice like an annoying squirrel, so like, you know, I try and.
But you fit your pace to what you're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the thing that's you know really interesting is when you start recording yourself or listening to yourself, jokes. It's funny, you'll think a joke is longer than it is, or shorter than it is. You'll do a joke, or you'll run through your set, and you'll be like, this is a 5-minute set, and then you'll be like, no, this was 2 minutes long.
Oh, yeah. And then you
gotta
start pulling stuff out of your pockets.
Yeah. And it's just, once you can find that, a whole lot. And the one thing that I find to be helpful is, I know you hung out around a lot with your friend Nick, but do you hang out with other comedians? Like, is there people that you sort of travel with, or... They're mostly, like, not a clique, but, like, people that you hang out with.
Yeah, I mean, Nick Cerace, Literal Angel, my boy. I used to, he's not really even a comic. He just, I grew up with the guy. And,
yeah.
We're great friends. And I would bring, especially when I started out, because, you know, sometimes you go to these seedy places, you don't always want to go alone.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And you don't know anybody, and you're nervous and stuff, so I'd bring my buddy Nick. He was like my bodyguard, almost.
Yeah.
He's just so naturally funny. He's just got such a funny voice.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
When he wants to dial it up. So I started, like, writing jokes for him to say, because he can get away with saying basically anything.
Yeah. The thing that was...
And that was fun. And then he started writing his own jokes, and they were funny.
Yeah, they were funny. And, you know, it was...
He reached the mountaintop, and I think he's done with it now.
He seemed, you know, it's hard because a lot of people do comedy, and they'll be really good, but there is a comfortability to it. There's a lot of people who are better suited for other things, you know, like acting or writing. And you sort of figure that out early on when you're performing in front of... an audience. You know, it's Larry David is famously that way. Like, he's a great writer, like, you know, known for his show, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Seinfeld, but, like, he's not the greatest stand-up because he's not a people person. So, it's...
Yeah, which is you gotta be, like...
Yeah, you gotta be happy with being in public. Like, to me, I've never been a shy person, ever, but I was just very much, like, humble and low-key, and just, like, whenever people got attention to me, it seemed like attention was always came with people doing something wrong, or, you know, older people would yell at you when you misbehaved. Like, to me, that good association with performing was a new feeling, you know? It's like, oh, this is good attention.
Oh, yeah, the validation. But the social aspect, like you're saying, there's guys that I hang out with. I mean, Chris Brial.
Oh, yeah, Austin, awesome.
Q, Seth Ruddick, all very funny guys.
Seth Ruddick, fantastic guy.
I like to think that we're friends if they're listening to this.
Right. Huh? Yeah.
Maybe shoot me a text.
Probably. Sometime. Yeah.
but it's networking is such a big thing, too, and that's where I fuck up because...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'll do my set, and then I'll get high and want to just dip out of there. And then I gotta remember that I got to, you know, talk to people and listen to other people's sets, which sounds rude. And you should listen to other people's sets to a degree.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's just unbearable.
Oh, yeah. Because...
Sometimes it's not okay.
No, because...
Dan Caprio, shout out to Dan Caprio, because he told me in the very beginning, he said he would sit there and he would listen to every single motherfucker's set.
Yeah, he would.
He never went on his phone.
No.
He would just sit there and listen. And he didn't laugh at all of it, but I always respected that.
I mean,
that's willpower.
That's a great thing to also be supportive in that way. Like, Caprio is great at that because he's also the king of, he's like amazing at confrontation. Like, I'm terrible with confrontation as a person. I'm very passive aggressive. I get it from my parents, both of them, but like, he is great because he'll do, the way that he does comedy too, is like, he's fine with any type of response. He's fine with any type of engagement. He can go as aggressive as the audience will be with him. He's not afraid of the audience. It's like, it's great. So to really see, the great thing about Dan is when you see him not do well, because
and just lean into
he'll just lean into it. He just goes even farther into it, which is which is really awesome. And he's one of, like, my biggest mentors. It's so funny, when we started out, like, he would start roasting me right away, but in a very nice, like, you know, it was never in ill-intended way. It was funny because a lot of people thought that we didn't get along, and I was like, no, I talk to him every day. Like we're super close friends.
It's like a love language for some of these crazy fucks.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, getting roasted by someone, it means that they actually like you, which right. sounds really yeah. unhealthy, but but it's funny, usually. I mean, like, because the ones you want to roast you, they're usually pretty good at it.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. I remember Robin Williams was doing this dramatic movie, and the director, like, came to, like, the comedy club to see him, and he was like, oh, they, like, verbally joust with each other, the comedians. And it's like, yeah, we sort of do. And it's sort of how you... And also, it's a great way to get, like, self-aware about shit, because you might not realize the type of idiosyncrasies or habits that you have socially, which can be tough, you know, to deal with sometimes, but also can be like, oh, that's a thing about me, I can talk on stage. Like, a lot of what I feel like as a good rule is, like, if it's not, like, if you get roasted, like, at a roast show or just by comedians, like, you can take that joke and use it however you want. So I've taken that a lot, is, like, someone will do a roast joke about me. It's like, I can add that, like, in some way to what I do on stage.
Yeah, I mean, there's positives and everything. And, I haven't really, to be honest, done really any roast stuff.
No, I'm...
Make it up there for that stuff.
Yeah, I'm not really that into that.
Well, I want it. It looks like I'd have a lot of fun with it, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
like, you can turn anything into anything. You just
gotta,
it's all about perspectives, right?
So, yeah. For sure. Yeah, it's...
Now, well,
oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I've been cutting you off all day. so, let me ask you some questions.
Yeah, ask me something. Ask me anything.
You went up.
Well, it's an interesting thing for me because I started performing within, like, middle school and really in high school with singing, and that was, like, my first, like, taste of the stage. And then when I started doing comedy, it was actually there was a flyer in, like, the room that I did it at, like, the end of the, like, close to the summer of going into, I guess it was my high school, like, my freshman year, and that was gonna be the next year. And my drama teacher was very popular as an improv, like, teacher. He has this group in, like, Red Bank area of, called, what was it? Improv Jam. And it was very popular with, my sister was, like, 4 years older than me. It was very popular with those, like, that age range of people. And it's very much, like, Whose Line Is It Anyway type of style of improv. And I really wasn't that familiar with it, but I was, like, a lot of comedians who I like started improv, so I was like, okay, I'll do improv for like a month and then I'll do comedy. But it was tough because I was a teenager, so there was no way I'd be able to get into any clubs, and clubs anyway in New Jersey are tough to get into even if you are a comedian, because they're just not great with like amateur nights and stuff. They're not very supportive. Like, comedy, the thing in New Jersey, and the reason I did this podcast, like, started to, was to expose a lot of comedians more, because it is very underground what we do. It's very much like we're in these basements and these restaurants, and we're not really at specific comedy clubs. So, to me, that was a tough thing to get into. So when I started doing it at, like, 22, it was like a Steamboat release. It was like, oh, I finally get to do this, and I was so excited. But it was tough because it was my first time being on stage on my own to be funny. When I was doing improv, it was like, I was not that great. I couldn't do characters and stuff. But I could at least be comfortable with the like, elite people that I was on stage with, so they could help carry me through it. When I got on stage, it was like, this is all me by myself. Like, I have to make this work.
Yeah.
And I kind of envy it. Like, I look back at it now, and I kind of miss, like, my early voice because I used to be way more opinionated, which I think happens in your early 20s. You're way more opinionated than in your 30s. You kind of calm down. Like, I'm going to be 30 in December. And it's like, I used to be like very, very opinionated. And that would help when coming up with jokes and things to talk about. But now as I become a more relaxed person, it's like, it's sort of a double-edged sword. It's like, you're happier in real life and you're more calmed down, but it's like, oh, I don't really talk about the stuff that I used to talk about or have the things that I used to think and talk about.
Yeah.
And just...
Fortunately, when you're kind of chilling, you don't always have the best stuff to say, you know?
Right, yeah, because a lot of it comes from, you know, anger and frustration and, you know, it's just things happening. You know, if you put yourself in any type of situation, really. And that's where comedy can come from. Like, to me, I feel like I became funny in, like, high school because I was picked on mercilessly. And when I started to get a little bit of an attitude when I was, like, 14, 15, I've told this, like, story before. Like, I would fight back verbally and I wouldn't get in trouble because I'd make my teachers laugh with whatever comeback or snappy line I had.
Yeah.
And plus I was a creative writer, so like I had that writing skill, so it was just like I could do that. And that was sort of where I learned how to do it. And comedy became like that superpower kind of, or like, it's like a video game, like a button you press all the time, because comedy and humor can do so many things. It can escalate a situation, it can de-escalate a situation, make people more comfortable with you, you know.
Well,
you can use it for so many different ways.
A nice way of saying it's a defense mechanism, really.
Yeah, for sure. So that's really what it started as for me. And, you know, my big thing now is, you know, it's funny we talk about, like, roast battling and everything and how that's so popular. Like, hip-hop has had a big influence on comedy in the past, like, 10, 15 years. Because comedy, like, you look at, like, Rodney Dangerfield, like, it used to be very, like, self-deprecating. And I'm very self-deprecating in my comedy, which is odd because a lot of people don't do that now. They kind of want to have the last laugh and last word, and I'm like,
I know, and that's so weird to me.
Yeah,
because it's like guys that are like their whole just bit is about how like dope they are,
right?
Or like how cool they are about for doing something. It's just how do you
Yeah, how do you mind for comedy in that?
Honestly, that's crazy.
Yeah, because it's like, that's not going to make you likable. Like, that's the one thing that's tough.
I mean, but that could just be my own...
No, I totally agree with that. It's a tough thing, because I think also people... It's like a self, like, thing where people want to feel better about themselves and make it, like... Make themselves the most comfortable in that way, you know? To me, I'm always like...
You almost want to get people to, they always say the best looking guy is never the funniest looking guy in a show, right?
Right.
So when I first would get booked on stuff, I would dress like all disheveled and like mm-hmm. I would wear like baggy clothes, and my dad would say like, why don't you want to go look nice, like wear a nice car? And I just was like, I just don't think it's funny.
Right.
Like, to just be so put together. And that's, like...
No, that makes sense.
You put yourself up on stage. It's, like, the verbal version of that. Where
I used to get that criticism a whole lot when I would do... when I would do stuff in New York, because the bringers, like, the... One of the guys that ran it would tell me that I would have to dress a little bit nicer. But I usually did dress pretty nice. But, like, to me, I'm way more of, like, I'm going to dress comfortable on stage because that's just how I am. And also, I feel like... Unless it's, like, a big show that's, like, important and, like, it sort of calls for the right setting to be dressed really nice, I feel like you should just be dressed how you usually dress as a person. Because the biggest thing in comedy, I think, is, for the most part, when you're doing comedy, once you get, like, better at it and when you start doing it, you want to feel like, with the audience, like, you are talking to people that you know and people that you're friends with. Like, that's sort of the best thing to do is, like, to figure out when you're the funniest in person, like, privately, like, with people, that's how you have to replicate it on stage, it seems. Like,
No, you got to get that when you're with your buddies and you're all bullshitting and that, you have to bring that kind of flow to.
Yeah.
That, yeah. So, I get that.
So that's what I feel you have to do. And it's always been like, you can really ask me anything. Like, I love talking either way about comedy. I also don't like to, like, to me, I don't like to do barrage people with a ton of questions. I like this to be kind of conversational.
No, this is not whatever you ask me, whatever, man.
So if you have anything that you else you want to ask me, that's totally cool.
Oh, I got you. You want to keep talking about comedy?
Yeah.
What kind of music you listen to?
We can talk about other stuff for sure. Yeah, totally. To get to know each other better. Yeah. I have a very interesting taste in music. I like a lot of '90s soft rock stuff. Awesome. Obviously, I talked about it in my act a little bit. I like pop punk music and stuff like that. I just like late '90s, early 2000s stuff. Very much in the Third Eye Blind and stuff like that. Just. What sort of stuff do you like music wise?
I'm not huge into the pop punk stuff, but I listen to like almost anything. Like I like a lot of like rock. I think right now like Wilco is probably my favorite.
Oh, band. Wilco is
love Wilco.
Great, yeah.
Pixies. I like a lot of like that kind of stuff. Some hip hop. I like older hip hop.
Oh yeah, for sure. I like hip hop too.
I don't listen to a lot of the newer stuff, but
no, I have a very specific like. I like, what's it called? Like the consciousness, like stuff that's like pretty, like political or people just talking about like important things. And also, I love like fast rap. It's like I'm really into that. I love faster stuff and just the classic stuff too. Like I like a lot of groups. Like that's something that's like kind of interesting. Is I like NWA and stuff like that, and music is such a parallel to comedy, because I've heard this saying, and it's so true with every musician that I've had on who like went into doing comedy, is that all like rock stars want to be comedians and all comedians want to be rock stars. And it's
I think there's a level of truth to
it. It's like actually a level of truth to that. I figured out, because every comedian that I had on that started as a musician or still does music, they talk a lot about how they sprinkle in jokes, or they have like the onstage banter with people, or they were able to do that. And
now have you had Chris Pruno on?
Yeah, I've had him on a couple of times, because I had him on for the regular, and then I used to do this other series with the podcast called like Geeking Out with Comedy, and we talk about a specific comedian. So I had him and a couple other people on that were the same type of one-liner style to talk about Mitch Hedberg.
Awesome.
So I did that with him.
I was gonna say Chris started in a band.
Yeah, that totally fits. Yeah, with
a lot of guys will do that. But yeah, I mean, I used to play guitar and.
Oh.
That was like before you get into comedy. Like you always think that'd be cool to be in a band and stuff and do that. I was in like a quasi band in like high school, but. You never really, but yeah, I don't know. I think it's just because they're so performative, and what's, I think with comedy is like you want making people laugh is the top thing, but you're also trying to get your point across, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean,
and with music, it's a little bit more like not necessarily clearer, but it's more of a interpretive way to get your point across.
Yeah, and it's a lot easier with music, like. Because it's natural, like, I always have a tough time, like, deciding if comedy to me is more of a, especially stand-up, if it's a skill or just, like, a lucky, like, personality trait that I have. Because I feel like I work on it pretty hard, but also I know that people have to be naturally funny to do it well. So to me, that's always been my sort of thing that I'm always trying to decide and, like, whenever I get a big head, I try to remember, you know, like, to be humble and stuff. But it can be very, like, ego-boosting to make a room love you and laugh and and be like, the, think you're the shit.
What's the rule, the like the 12-hour rule or something?
Oh yeah, like 100 hours, like that'll make you better. Like
no, like so if I do a if I have a show and I crush, right?
Yeah.
I can only like feed my ego about it for like 12 hours.
Oh right, yeah, that makes sense.
Because the next day, if I go into the next show thinking I'm the shit, then I'm gonna bomb because
yeah.
You can't go into it like that. And vice versa, if I eat shit, the next day I can't go into the show being like, I'm horrible.
Right.
Then, you know what I mean?
Because the audience is, it sounds way more hardcore when I say this. They're kind of like sharks in a way. It's like they can sniff out when you're uncomfortable. And the thing to me that's always been tough, like I have a joke about it now, which I start out with, which is great because I'm never uncomfortable on stage, like with performing. I've been performing for so long, starting with singing and improv and everything. But I have really bad social anxiety in real life. So that's sort of the thing that people pick up on is like, I have to explain, like, oh, I'm not nervous because of, you know, because of stage fright. I'm just nervous because I'm an anxious person in general. So
yeah, it's funny to say that because the worst fucking stuff is when you're introduced to somebody and the comedy comes up and they're like asking about it and everything.
Oh yeah.
And it's funny because you always get people that are like. That's so brave.
Right.
That's so brave that you do that.
And I always... I
have so much respect. So brave. And I think I think it's... I guess your degree. I used to be absolutely petrified of public speaking. Like, I'll tell you this. I go to a bar almost every week when I do karaoke night.
Oh, you do karaoke. That's awesome.
Well, here's the thing. I go, but I've never done karaoke, and I will never do karaoke.
Oh.
I'm absolutely petrified. I would never go on stage and sing in front of people. That sounds crazy to me. I could never do it, but I do. But I can eat shit and tell horrible jokes and
right.
have people. But and I would feel nothing. But I could not go. And dude, I love songs. I love to sing.
No, I used to be pretty decent. I used to be decent, and now because I haven't practiced and done it in so long. Like, I sang, like, maybe last year, like, the year before for something, and it was terrible. And the one thing that was always funny for me is, like, I have a naturally, like, higher voice, so a lot of music that, like, I was given to do was not what I was into. So I had to do, like, a lot of, like, Jersey Boys, like, musical type of stuff to make my voice. And it really strained your voice to sing that high. And when I was in high school, that was, like, the thing that I hated. Like, when I... went to this new school, like, the one criticism that I had with the music teacher, with, like, the vocal teacher, was he made kids sing songs, like, that were better suited to their voice, but a lot of them couldn't relate to the material. So I was like, how can you sing about a song about, like, a relationship when you've never been in a relationship before? To me, that's always been odd. Like, I figured out, and it's the same thing with doing, like, I think with comedy, too, is, like, when you're performing in general, you gotta have attachment to what you're talking about and what you're saying, like you said earlier. Like, you wanna...
Yeah, it's gotta be true to that.
It's gotta be true to that. So, to me, I remember the last time I ever did really, really well was... there's this Adam Sandler song called Red Hooded Sweatshirt, which is very, like, high-pitch, like, singing. And that was the last time I did it of, like, singing publicly that went well. And it was just... I've had a lot of weird... like, experiences where it's gone really well, and sometimes it hasn't, and it's just been, like, you know, to me, I was also surrounded by people, I think, in my peer group when I was singing that, oh, they are so much better than me, and that's what I've always felt like with this, and the tough thing with comedy now is, like, I think I'm good at comedy, but there is so many more people that do comedy nowadays, and, you know, it's funny, like, Bob Grunfest?
Yeah,
like, he started doing comedy in the 80s, like, he was doing comedy with, like, Seinfeld and all those people, like, you know, like, Eddie Murphy, like, he saw a few times, like, and back then, no one was really doing comedy, like, it wasn't a thing that people did, and now everyone does it, and it's so popular that it's tough to stand out.
Yeah, but I don't think it's always necessarily, like, Like, you shouldn't be trying to stand out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you should, like, in the long run, yes, but, like, if you're going in and you're focusing on standing out, that's how you end up being, like, Mark Random and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Like you gotta go and just get better. And
oh, yeah, for sure.
I don't know, and just with the comfortability, and you just get the hang of it.
Yeah, and you have to love it, like, that's the one thing, especially that you learn early on, is, like, you gotta like it, because there are mics that you sit through that are bad, and experiences that are bad. This can also probably into what else I wanted to ask you about, because we can talk about other things besides, like, stand-up, but, have you ever seen the movie Dodgeball before?
Yeah.
One scene that I always is, reminds me of open mics is, like, explain them to other people, or when you bring a friend, it's like, you know, they have that scene where, like, the weird coach, like, comes in, and it's like, is he weird? It's like, no. And then he acts all weird, and it's like, well, not weird for us. And that's how open mics are for us. It's like...
It's so funny when you watch people bring...
Yeah.
Like, or dates.
Yeah.
When you watch someone bring a date to an open mic, you're like, what are you doing, man?
Because the date will be like, oh, that was terrible. And you'll be like, no, it was actually pretty good. You should have been here 2 weeks ago. When it...
I don't know, open mics are very much to just, like, try new shit, right?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want anybody to see that right. I want to be attracted to me. Like, that's a crazy move.
Yeah, it is.
There's a brewery, I think it might have been up in Morris Town, Morrisville.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the Moors, right?
Yeah.
And I go, and then they're doing a mic, so I go up, and the guy before me all he does is these jokes about how he wants to kill his ex-wife, and he's getting divorced, and let me say, I thought they were funny, but not, I don't think, the way he wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And it was just crazy. It was really a wild move, because then I see him walk back to the table, and he's sitting with a woman, and they're like, so I went up immediately and was like, is that your date? Like, is that your girlfriend? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, that's absolutely mental, man.
Yeah.
But people people don't say it.
Yeah. I mean, perception is everything with comedy, like, and that's the one thing that I've had to learn is, like, you know, people will, and that's the tough thing, like, I always say with likability, like I was talking about earlier, with performing, like, anything else, like, you can have a bad interaction with a musician, like, personally, and they can still do music, and it'll sound good, but when, and it'll be, like, they know how to play guitar, like, it'll be skilled, like, full, but when you're doing comedy, the thing that I've learned is if I have a bad interaction with anyone, and they see you do stand-up for the first time, they're immediately not going to like you, and you're never going to change their mind, really, of when they see you.
I'm trying to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I don't know, because I feel like I'm a guy that people have had bad interactions with.
Mm-hmm.
In comedy, to be honest. Like, I don't know, I don't, like I said before, I'm not always the most, warm in terms of, like, talking to people, especially if I, like, haven't seen your set and I'm not.
Right.
You know? So, I like to think that there's always a little hope that I could win these people back over.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Joke, you know?
Well, I think with comedians...
Or else I've really screwed myself.
No, I think with comedians, there's always that safety net of, you know, like we said, we're all pretty weird as people, so, like, I've had so many moments where, you know... I don't drink, but I've had so many moments where, like, you have those instances of, like, oh, I can never show my face again, oh, I made this mistake socially, and it's always been like, no, like, everyone sort of gives you that leeway of we're all a little bit fucked up, so we're all fine with, you know, if something goes bad or something happens, you can just be like, no, you can come back and you can,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, there's obviously, don't say the N-word.
Don't. Right, you don't do, like, that shit,
there's
yeah.
There's a couple rules.
Yeah.
That are kind of written in the sand, but...
Yeah. But for the most part, it's like, you can... There's a camaraderie to it all the time.
Yeah, especially because most of these guys, especially the ones that really stick around, don't seem like absolute shitbags all the time. You know?
No.
No one's really coming in to start problems. I mean, there's a couple guys.
Right.
And if, listen, Dweck, Let me ask you this.
Yeah, sure.
Let's talk shit. Who's the one guy you feel comfortable talking shit about?
Oh. There's not really anyone nowadays that I have. You know, it's kind of funny.
I always try to see if you have problems.
No, I used to have problems with this one lesbian comedian, Jessa Lima. We get along now, but when she was starting out, she had a mic, and she was just like, she wasn't a very likable person, which she will admit, but like, it was hard to be in that place where like, you're better than someone, and you feel that way, that like I did, like you feel like you're better than someone, and they're an asshole to you. It's like, oh no, I'm better at this than you, so you can't be mean to me. It's like, that's our thing.
Yeah.
And then, to me, everything I've had, like, any time I've really had a bad interaction now is, like, there was this kid, I think his name's Scott or something. He had some type of disability where he was he had, like, a walker and a wheelchair and stuff. And, like, he would do comedy, and, like, it was funny when he would do comedy, like, sometimes he'd do really well when he would talk about how people, like, said something rude to him and he had a comeback or whatever. But for the most part, his stuff was just terrible. No, his name was Connor. And the stuff he would just do terrible at comedy, it seemed like to me like he didn't watch comedy. Like, that was the weird thing to me. Like, I see that with a few people. It's like, it didn't seem like he was really, like, into the art form. So I would get, like, mad at him because he wouldn't do well. And the big thing that was happening in that time period was I had my roast of myself, like, right before COVID, like, in 2019 of December, like, around my birthday. I started to do a roast of myself. I had that show because I had a bad habit of leaving. Like, I'd stay and watch my friends, but I'd leave right away, and then what would happen is people would make jokes about me, like, mostly my friends, but, like, some people would pick up on it. And they'd make jokes about me, but I wouldn't be in the room. I'd be home. And it was, like, annoying, like, the bartender and stuff, because, like, people wouldn't get it. Like, they were just watching. And, like, so I was like, okay, I'm going to stay longer, and I'm going to do this roast so everyone can get their jokes out, and everyone can sort of do what they want. You know, it's funny, like, I was picked on so badly that when I started to do comedy, I liked it. I liked being made fun of by other comedians because it was like, oh, this is funny now. When I was being made fun of when I was younger, in, like, high school and stuff, it wasn't funny. The people that were making fun of me were not funny. So when the people who are making you fun of you in a lighthearted way are actually talented at comedy, it softens the blows a little bit more to be like, okay, that doesn't upset me, or that doesn't go too far. And I have the only thing that upsets me, like, is, like, a line for me, is you can't say I'm not funny. Like, you can't make fun of my comedy specifically. You can make fun of anything about me, how I dress, how I talk, anything like that is fine. But you can't say I'm not good at this shit, because I know that I am.
Plus, like, sometimes you get your balls busted your whole life about something, right?
Yeah.
One day someone makes a joke about it, and then you go, oh, you know what, that actually is funny. That,
yeah,
that actually
for sure.
Is a funny angle about that. And then you don't care anymore.
Yeah. And I think personally for me, like, when you get into an older age, like, especially in your 30s, you just stop caring, not in a bad way, but, like, in a good way, of, like, what people really think of you and what.
Oh, yeah. And no one's really thinking of you.
And you also realize that. Like, no one. You also realize that there's not that much attention as you think there is, or as you might be in your head about.
Everybody thinks that they're, the main character of the show, like,
right?
The simulation is
that's what you always think with your life. It's like, oh, I totally thought that. Like, especially when I was younger, and
that everyone was robots.
No, that, like, not that I knew my life wasn't the TV show, but I kind of treated it that way. That I always sort of, I guess, saw myself in that vein. And I still think, like, I would never want to be an actor. But, like, if there was a TV show where I could, like, play myself, like, I could do that because I feel like I have enough qualities, like, personality-wise, that make me a character that people can root for and a character that people cannot root for at all. And be, like, you know, just funny mishaps I always get myself into. Which is just, like, the thing that's really been like, interesting for me doing comedy. It's just, I have a lot of things that just happen to me, and I'll just be like, oh, I can talk about this on stage now, or this really happened. One moment, I just need to do something wrong. Okay, now it's recording the second part. It went by so fast, I didn't realize that we were...
Everything's good?
Yeah, so everything's good. I want to ask you, what else were sort of media that you liked comedy-wise that sort of fits your sense of humor? Like, what kind of movies did you like, or do you like?
So when I was coming out of high school, I was gonna go to film school.
Oh.
So I was really into movies and stuff. And then, you know, stuff's expensive, man. And also, I'll be the first to admit, I don't really know how to use computers, which is hard when you're trying to be an adult person.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Going into film, I was really into like writing and. Mm-hmm. The whole aspect of like the actual filming, but I didn't know how to edit really, and I didn't like it. I didn't like learning about it.
Oh yeah,
I didn't go to film school. I went to school for art. I went to community college for fine art.
Oh,
I started painting pictures.
Oh,
and then I started doing comedy. But I always liked funny stuff. In all of that, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, really, like older comedy movies I was really always into, like Animal House.
Oh, yeah.
Shit. Like, I just was so into that shit. And then, like, with art, I just, I do some painting now, but not nearly as much, but I like to do funny stuff, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah, for sure.
Weird out there. And the same stuff I almost try to emulate with my comedy, I think.
Yeah. It's very common for anyone to really come into comedy, you know, with some other thing that they did. Like, I was going to be a screenwriter. That's what I thought I was going to do. And I'm a good writer, creative writing wise, but grammatically I'm not that great as I wish to be. So like, I took all like the writing and like English classes that I could take when I was in community college for like 6 years. And I took a screenwriting class, and that was actually where I met Liam Wolf, which was really, yeah. I met him, and then, like, I was friends with him for years on Facebook, because he always had, like, the best memes and stuff, and then I saw him at a bar, like, when he was starting to do comedy, like, 3 years ago, and it was, like, the first time I had seen him in person, even though I had seen him, like, all the time on Facebook. And I was like, oh, shit, that's Liam. And now he's been doing it, and he's so great, but he was in my class. And, yeah, that was an interesting thing. Like, I never really got into it, but it was nice. And then I took, like, a film studies. Like, we would watch movies, and, like, we would have to write about them and take these. And it was – I actually did well in that class. But the thing that was funny, like, a lot of people took that class, like, the cinematography class, just to sleep. Like, because they thought it would be, like, an easy, like, thing of, like, you're just watching movies. And it's like, you know, to me, I never was as great as a writer, like, grammatically as I wanted to be. So that never really worked out for me. But I still have, like...
I don't think that stuff's the most important, though.
I still have ideas and shit, like, in my head of, like, you know, that I would love to work on. Like, if I could ever, you know... make a comedy movie, I'd love to, like, that would be, like, really cool to me, just because, like, it just seems like that'd be really cool, but, yeah, it's tough. Did you do any other type of performing, like, acting or anything when you were younger, or any type of theater or anything?
I think we did a play in middle school called Bach to the Future about Bach. I think I was a background scholar.
Mm.
I'd say a couple lines, but no, not really. I mean, I did, like, with the film stuff, when we would have projects, I would have to do some acting, and
right.
I don't think I was necessarily great at it, but I was also a big kid. A teenager, you know?
Yeah.
I was just trying for a grade. I wasn't trying for
right.
An award or anything. So, but I would do it. I mean, I have all this stuff planned out that I've been trying to get going in terms of like sketches and like a little like variety show kind of thing.
Oh, that's great.
I'm gonna have to, you know, act in that, I guess.
Right.
I can't pay anybody.
Well, I know that you have your mic. I forgot to ask you about that. I know I had that written down.
I was doing the mic in Princeton. And I don't do that one anymore. I gotta find a new spot. But that was a cool spot.
It was
a pretty nice shithole.
I'm pretty awful at hosting. That's the one thing that I'm not good at. I've never been good at hosting, which is a skill that you really need to be good at in comedy to move ahead. But I've never been good at it, so. That's always tough.
I lucked out because the bar that I had started that mic, that was the first mic I ever started. And that bar in Princeton, I drank there. I mean, I work right down the road, so I was mm-hmm. I drank there almost every night, right? Mm-hmm. So I knew everybody. Like, even the people that were drinking there, everyone knew me. And I was able to just start hosting a mic in a place that I was, like, it was already so comfortable.
Right.
You know what I mean?
To have that rapport and everything.
I already knew most of my jokes would land. So there was no anxiety about it, and that made learning how to host a lot easier. Because mm-hmm. you can risk, you can go for more risks when you feel like everyone's kind of on your team.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But yeah, no, hopefully I'll have a mic around here because there's not a lot of stuff like in the Central Jersey-ish area. I mean, New Brunswick and stuff, but I'm a little bit south of that.
Right. Yeah, that's the tough thing with comedy, especially, like, no matter where you are, like, it's very tough to get to certain places and be, like, be somewhere, you know? Because with comedy, what's tough is you have to be in, do it more consistently, and traveling is always tough no matter what you are, you know? It can be very tough, especially in your early 20s, like, financially to do stand-up. Like, you really need...
expensive.
It's an expensive thing, and it's really a...
And you don't
like,
make money.
It's tough to explain to adults and, like, older people of why you subject yourself to it, of why you do that. Like, that's the toughest thing to me to explain early on was, like, no, it's like, you know, you're doing it as a passion. And...
Yeah, I got to give my family a lot of credit, honestly, because when I decided I was going to do film, they were like, okay, and they were very supportive. And then I did it, and I was painting, and they were like, oh, okay. And then, and I could tell that I wasn't really doing back steps, but I was doing side steps. Mm-hmm. And then I told them I was going to do comedy, and they're very supportive. But I mean, We get into it and they get worried about it, but I tell them it's going to work out. You don't have to worry, which is
right.
Crazy to say, but...
No, I mean, you have to have that part of it. Mike Birbiglia has a great joke in one of his later albums about how, like, you have to sort of be a little bit delusional to do comedy. You have to...
Oh, yeah. It's crazy to think that anybody would actually care enough, that a mass amount of people would care enough about what you have to say.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think if you just love it, like, that's the main thing to me is, like, if you like doing it and you're comfortable with it and it's something you love to do, you're going to do it no matter what area you're in. Like, I say this a lot, the reason why I also did this podcast, like, started interviewing people was to give myself a better... attitude about it, because I do get sick and tired sometimes of being in one state. Like, a couple years ago, I got to go to Texas for 3 days to do comedy, which was really super cool. And it's like, that's what I want to do more of, is go to different states and different places and, you know, actually, like, be able to do it more consistently. When you're in the same place, it can get very tiring, because, you know how mics are and how draining they can be and how, like... I'm not, like, I don't think my standards are too high. Maybe they are too high, but I'm like, I just need a, like, if you have an open mic, you just need a microphone that works. That's the only thing that I have is, like, have a microphone that works and, like, be good at, like, be okay at hosting. Because I know I can't host, so I have no, like, room to judge anyone, but it's tough, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you just gotta enjoy it.
Yeah, for sure. Just wrap things up, you're on Instagram, right? Leonard, it's underscore Kelly, right? Yeah.
I think my name on there is, underscore. Oh, it's
Kennard Lelly. Oh, Kennard Lelly. Right.
Yeah, I have one of those. I mean, I post those sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is sick, man. I always wanted to be able to come by and do this with you.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And if you ever have any thing coming up, like you have a show or you have any type of thing coming up that, you know, is quote-unquote, like, big or anything that you feel you need to promote, just let me know and I can have you back on and we can chop it up again.
Definitely come back on. We can bullshit some more.
Yeah, for sure. I have a silly question. I hope this isn't too weird. Is, did people ever call you Leo?
Yeah, so a lot of people call me Leo. And so my name's Leonard. My dad's name is Leonard, right? Because that's the only way you get that name now.
Right.
You
got to
get it passed down. Yeah. But I have family members who are actually just named Leo. So for years, I got weird because I didn't want them to think I was, like, stealing their name. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Now a lot of people call me Leo.
Yeah. It's funny. We have this thing in my dad's side of the family where so many people are named Raymond, like my brother's name Raymond and so many of my cousins. So it's like, they call everyone by their middle name. It's like they say their name and then they say their middle name. It's like, oh, that's Raymond Danny. That's Raymond Robert. It's like.
on behalf of all letters out there, and I think I can say this, I really want to push for a better media representation of the name Leonard, because anytime we're in the media, we're like weirdos or they're pedophiles in movies or like, the pig from Angry Birds is named Leonard.
Oh.
Isn't that messed up, man?
Yeah.
So if I could leave guys on anything, maybe like name your kids Leonard, try to push for a, let's change it up.
Yeah.
All right, hey.
Yeah, so.
I won't keep you anymore.
No, it was great. Thank you so much for doing this and, hopefully I'll get to see you around.
I'll see you around. I'll probably see you this week,
all right. Yeah, sweet. All
right, man. All right,
great. Have a nice week.
I'll talk to you.
Weekend. All right, great. Bye. All right, that was Leonard Kelly. That was awesome. Finally get it done.